welcome to Walking the Field remotely via Zoom, but not really via Zoom. We're going to try and make this a little better than last time. It's your host, Gerald Hoppins, with the co-host and arguably now my best friend, Alex Crow. We're here to bring you coaching carousel news. Are you surprised? Yes, this is what happens when we can talk for more than 2 hours once a week. Yes, this is what's going on. This is what's going down. We got a lot of content that we're going to be filming the next couple of days. We're really excited to bring it to you, but we have been waiting for this moment, a moment I didn't think personally that was going to really happen. The coaching carousel of college football. A pandemic, what is that? Never heard of her. We are out here in these streets. Alex, welcome to the carousel. Are you ready to take a ride?
I am absolutely ready to take a ride. Because you had talked about, you know, when we were still back in studio and we only had, you know, maybe 15, 20 minutes every couple of weeks to talk about the potential hot seats of different coaches, that maybe we wouldn't see a whole lot of it. But it looks like a lot of schools have just frankly just bit the bullet. And we're going to jump, you know, kind of right into it just to give you a little rundown of all the coaches so far that have either resigned, stepped down, fired, you know, they've parted ways essentially, whether mutually or, you know, not mutually in some cases we'll get to. But of course, we had Jay Hobson very early in the season at Southern Miss. He basically had got into basically a tiz with the administration, decided to resign on September 7th. From Southern Miss. They have since hired a coach, and we'll talk about the coaching hires in a second. We've got Gary Anderson, who was removed from Utah State in early November. Will Muschamp in mid-November, November 15th, Will Muschamp, program killer, was removed from South Carolina. And then we had Derek Mason. He was released from his very tough job at Vanderbilt towards the end of November. And then in December, we've had a couple of firings, especially here recently, some bigger names starting to get fired. We led off in December with Stephen Campbell at South Alabama was fired. And then we had Matt Viador from ULM, who has been not very good the last couple of years. We had Blake Anderson step down at Arkansas State on December 10th. And then on December 12th and 13th, we saw the removals of Kevin Sumlin at Arizona right off the heels of what I believe was a 70-7 loss against, you know, obviously arch rival Arizona State, the Fighting Herm Edwards, we like to call them. And that basically was the final straw at Arizona. Then we had Lovie Smith. I think the writing was kind of on the wall for that as well. Just never really took hold of an Illinois program there. And then finally, probably the biggest name we've seen fired so far, Gus Malzahn out after many seasons at Auburn. That included, if I'm not mistaken, playing for a national championship very early in his tenure, was, of course, on the staff of Gene Chizik as the offensive coordinator when they won a couple of years. I guess at this point, it's more than a couple of years ago, which is why it's in the past enough that Auburn's able to move on from him. But I know that, you know, Auburn, of course, one of the toughest jobs in football. You, no matter how good you are, you're going to be the little brother to Alabama. And you saw that with Gus Malzahn, just wasn't able to overcome it often enough. And that's why we saw him get rid of. And so, Jerry, what are your initial thoughts? I guess we can talk about who has already replaced their coaches first. Of course, you mentioned Southern Miss has replaced their coach. They went, I believe, with their interim head coach, Will Hall, if I'm not mistaken.
That is correct. They did go with Will Hall. I thought that was pretty solid. Southern Miss is a program that with Jay Hobson, he was there for almost like 10 years. So, yes, he did get into it with the administration, but he had built something around there. Some of this was respectable at best. So, it was the search took a while, obviously, in the sense that they weren't really sure if they were going to keep Will Hall around or not, but they decided to and promote him. Shane Beamer, we talked about a bit earlier. I don't want to give him too much. We talked about him in the first episode. Please listen to that, of course, because we talked about the most important things in the world, college football. But, you know, Beamer, we talked about just a different mindset than Will Muschamp has the ability to do that thing called, oh yeah, running a good, competent offense. That's why they got him. I think my favorite hire so far and most interesting is Kane Womack. He was the assistant, now still finishing his season at Indiana. Indiana obviously having that hot run. And I want to say that's known for their defense, right? But he's a really young guy. He's like 33, 34. Younger coach, very analytically driven, kind of quiet. I see him as like a younger Dave Arnada almost, that guy at Baylor. So I thought that was probably the most interesting out of him, a defensive-minded guy, is something that we're seeing a little bit more than we thought we would. I think me and Alex have talked about a bit, like the offensive movement towards coaching, right? A lot of these head guys are now offensive-minded because that's where the game's going. Look at Alabama. Alabama scoring 40 points, you have to score 40 points. If Clemson's scoring 40 points, you have to too. So it was interesting for them to get Womack. Blake Anderson kind of went with a lateral movement here after he was went from Arkansas State to Utah State. Yeah, that was kind of from what I had heard from listening to guys like Stephen Godfrey and just listening around that, that he was kind of, they were kind of both publicly fed up with them, each other. So it was a mutual parting. He stepped down. It was not a firing, and he went collateral to Utah State, up, down, whatever. He didn't want to be there. They didn't want him there. And that's why you saw Mr. Butch Jones stepping in to the Arkansas State job. I want to shout out Cole Tusing here. He said, could Mizzou please schedule Arkansas State to fire Butch Jones again? I thought that was amazing. Shouts Cole Tusing, a triple threat. You always have to know we represent KCOU hard over here. And the last hiring that we have, and we'll talk about, let's talk about this one between, we'll talk about this one, Butch Jones, because I want you to talk about Butch Jones. I think that's funny. But Clark Lee is now the head coach at Vanderbilt. Granted, he's going to finish his season with Notre Dame and do whatever they got to do. But this is the hire we talked about a bit before it happened is one of the guys that Vanderbilt was targeting, was a Tennessee native, everything like that, played for Vanderbilt as a fullback, has the connections. But another defensive-minded guy. First, talk to me a bit about Butch Jones. Again, I just want to talk about Butch Jones. Amazing. But give me a little bit of what you thought about these last two hires that we saw on the 12th and 14th, Alex.
Well, I mean, really, one thing – I mean, you hit it exactly right as far as Clark Lee goes. I mean, he's a Vanderbilt guy. He's from Tennessee. And so all of that made sense. And I guess really the reasoning of hiring him, if you're hiring a defensive guy – you might as well get one of the best defensive guys out there. You know, of course, I think it'd be very hard pressed to hire Brent Venables away from Clemson just because he is paid like a head coach, right? So he has no reason to take a job like Vanderbilt. And Vanderbilt, I mean, nobody's denying it. It's one of the toughest jobs in college football. I mean, very few people have had success there, you know, and the guys who have had success, you know, as soon as they've had the ticket out, they've taken it. So Clark Lee, I think, is a good personality fit for Vanderbilt. Again, he's a guy that understands the culture, and this year especially, you've seen Notre Dame. They have really taken a step up in defense. I would always kind of argue that they've been more of a defensive team, just because they don't run a very wide open spread that has become even more popular recently. And Clark Lee's done a very nice job this year. I mean, again, you've seen marquee wins, most notably over Clemson, who was, you know, everyone, they were the number one seed at that point in the college, in the AP rankings, before, of course, the college football playoff rankings came out, and they were able to get the win in that, and a lot of that I think you can attribute to Clark Lee, is he was able to contain a Clemson offense and was able to essentially get them the win.
Yeah, no, honestly, it was, I think it's just interesting, like, Lay's someone that, you know, especially because Vanderbilt, when they came out, they said they wanted a guy who could work a little bit on the offensive end. But I don't want to say it's a safe hire, but it's a guy who knows the area. The biggest thing with Vanderbilt, and I think this is bigger than Clark Lee, and it's going to be money. Okay. Literally earlier this year, Florida did not go into the locker room of Vanderbilt, like the opposing team's locker room, because it's that bad. Like, that's not something that you can, like, if you can be as good of a coach, the X and O's, you could talk a big storm. But you can't be that far behind in the Southeastern Conference, okay? This is not a CUSA team. This is not a team in the lowest, you know, lower divisions of FBS. Like, you need to have facilities. And Vanderbilt hasn't done that. If they're going to bring that commitment money-wise, there's an opportunity that Clark Lee can do some damage here. I just still am stuck on Butch Jones being a coach at Arkansas State. It's a funny hire. It's a good – I don't want to say it's a bad hire. But it's fun. It's exciting. I want to give Arkansas State credit. Having some excitement at a program at any time. We saw with Shane Beamer, right? Shane Beamer really hasn't done anything yet in his first week. I expect him to change the world. But one week in, and he said the right things at the press conference. People are excited. He looked like a good hire. He's a nice name. That's what Butch Jones is kind of giving me, this energy of big name, fun hire. You have anything to disagree with that?
And I think that, you know, his most previous job is one that we see with a lot of hires, especially at kind of some smaller schools, essentially, as my computer is just trying to freeze on me right now while I try and look at my notes. But I mean, he's followed a pipeline that has shown success for a couple of people, even recently, you know, most recently, I'd say Lane Kiffin, is going from an Alabama analyst to coordinator to to head football coach again, you know, after you've had kind of a rough go at a larger program. Of course, Butch Jones, the most recent head coach of Tennessee, where, I mean, he was moderately successful, right? I mean, his last two seasons, or his last couple of seasons, I think he went like, you know, 30-24 or something like that. So, I mean, that's definitely not bad. It's just not good enough in the SEC.
Yeah, and you can say the same thing now about Jeremy Pruitt. Isn't that crazy? We're going to save our hot seats for later. But there are four jobs that we have right now on the pedestal that are still wide open. Some cut ranging from you have a lot of work to make yourselves competent to who knows? You're right in this. You're right in the fray of things. All four of these coaches, their jobs are open for a reason. I'm going to start first with Louisiana Monroe. Pretty simple reason why this job's open. You go 0-10, does not help your case no matter who you are. Okay, if Nick Saban went like 10-0, it doesn't matter how much repertoire he's built at Alabama. He's gone. You lose that many games, things happen. And this was between this and the South Carolina firing of Will Muschamp was the moment I realized this was still going to be somewhat of a normal year. Louisiana Monroe is broke. They don't got money. Like, and they're taking the hit financially because of this thing called that pandemic. So the fact that they're firing their coach because he stinks means that anybody was open. I think, and same thing like Will Muschamp, right? The school's losing $30 million, and they said, we don't want you anymore, William. That was just – those two moments really saw it for me. With Louisiana Monroe, it's – you got to know that you are walking into probably one of the hardest jobs in the country that is on the lower level at least. There's a lot of hard jobs, a lot of hard spots. But when you're coming – when you're talking – we're talking slums of the slum right now. This is not a place as a coach that you're going to go to – like I said, if you're going to go here, you're either hoping that you can really revive a program or you're a retiring guy and you just want to see if you can make something kind of better. Names that I've seen a little bit, I'm using the Athletics search by, I think it's Chris Vanini or something like that. He had a couple of names. The biggest one he put was Mark Hudspeth. He's been all over the place recently. He's won a lot, and that'd be an interesting move. The other one would be Ron Roberts, the Baylor defensive coordinator. He was flirting a bit with the Southern Miss job. That's why they're kind of connecting him here. And the third one, I think this is probably most interesting, is John Simon, the Memphis wide receivers coach. We could throw names out here all day, but I think the Louisiana Monroe job is probably the hardest to kind of like predict because we don't even know how much money they're going to give to these guys. If anyone's actually interested, this could be a job that, you know, somebody, there's about five or six names that you could put on this, that at least this article is put on this. I could see none of them getting it just because do you really want this job is, I think, the real question.
Yeah, and one more name that I think is really in the mix for the ULM job, I think, would have to be Alonzo Hampton. He's gotten even a vote of confidence from Florida State legend. I mean, not that this is the Florida State job, but Charlie Ward, Heisman Trophy winner from way back when, has endorsed Alonzo Hampton for this job. And Hampton, I think, is a guy that makes sense for this job, of course. He's a former Louisiana Monroe player and a team captain at that. Yeah, you know, he played defensive back for them right now, or most recently, he's been a defensive analyst for Arkansas. He's also spent some time with Florida State in a couple different capacities as a defensive analyst, as well as special teams coordinator. And he's a guy that I think he is a type of guy, because he's never been a head coach really anywhere, I think that it makes sense that, you know, why not take your first head coaching job and try and revive a program at which you played?
Yeah, I only worry because recently we've seen this thing called like the dream hire, because he almost sounds like a dream hire. Former player, first head coaching job, you know, a lot of good things here that, you know, let's look at like guys like Todd Herman, right? Todd Herman was supposed to be this perfect dream hire. Jim Harbaugh, perfect dream hire in the bigger senses, right? Supposed to bring their programs to the next level, and they have failed miserably. I just only hope that that's not the problem. I like him a lot, though. But the Louisiana Monroe job, like I said, this can go literally anywhere. I think it's, you know, there's some guys who want it, but that's going to be a tough one to pin down. I don't want to spend too much time on it. They didn't win a game. Why are we talking about it much more? Speaking of teams that didn't win games, let me go up the three we have left. Let's go to Illinois. Yeah, because I'm from Illinois. Woohoo! Firing Lovie Smith, the former Chicago Bears coach. I think he coached in Tampa Bay as well. Came down to University of Illinois. The biggest – I was kind of surprised by this only because this is, again, a weird year. And I didn't know if a lot of people were going to be ready to step into this job or if they had someone walking in, which is what we're going to talk a lot about with Auburn. I think that the idea that we're going to have someone walk right into this job and we don't know that yet, pretty interesting. The downfall of Lovie Smith was his recruiting. Okay, earlier in the year, earlier in his tenure, he was starting to get some kids from Chicago, Indianapolis, and St. Louis. Right now, three of the areas that Illinois football should have some type of control in. And earlier in that year, at least closer to home, he had some success. Started failing there. One of the reasons being, hey, Missouri, crazy, right? Shout out to Mizzou. He wasn't winning around town, and then he wasn't winning games. The one thing about Lovie Smith, though, his guys played really hard. They liked him. So I thought it was kind of interesting. I thought they'd put him one more year. But I was wrong. Well, it's not the first time. It's not like, I also said Miami was going to keep it close against UNC. I'm usually wrong. So on that note, a couple of names that I saw and I think are going to be pretty good. Lance Leopold. Lance Leopold's been jumping from Division III, Whitewater, Wisconsin. Really good Division III program. Actually very slept on. I actually love that program a lot. And he's going to Buffalo right now. Granted, he has Jared Patterson, who's been crazy. But he's been winning. And that's something you got to talk about. And he's from the area. He's a great spot for it. My favorite and most interesting, because this would be a really big turn of events, is Jeff Munkin. Because Munkin does have the ties around there, has the ties in the state and everything else. But not anymore? You don't like that hard?
No, it's Todd Munkin. OC of Georgia is the name that I've seen.
I've seen Jeff.
He's from Todd Munkin is from – yeah, he's from Illinois, and he runs the spread, essentially. Jeff Munkin, of course, the coach of Army. But, yeah, Todd Munkin's actually the name that I've seen.
I believe it was from
the Daily Illini.
That's interesting, too. I'm looking at The Athletic again. I'm using Bruce Feldman. I'm interested in this Jeff Munkin thing. I've heard more Jeff Munkin than Todd Munkin. But hey, maybe you put the two together and just worlds collide. That actually be a horrible idea. Don't do that, Illinois. I know you're not good at decisions, but don't do that. The only reason I'm really interested in this Jeff Munkin thing is because this is something we talked about a bit with Vanderbilt. You can just make Illinois the most annoying team in the Big Ten. You have to plan for the triple option every week. Jeff Munkin is also from Illinois as well, and he's done a great. He's one of those guys that all the lame media people will say, hey, he created the culture of Army. He created this, the culture. The dude would just be annoying as hell to coach against. It's annoying to coach against the triple option. Ask Georgia Tech, people who played against Georgia Tech for years. Okay, like, it would be something different, and it gives you a chance. But I thought that was the most interesting. I think Lance Leopold is a very good idea and a very strong candidate for this job. Alex, you want to make the case for Todd Munkin?
So, yeah, I mean, Todd Munkin, you've seen the success that he's been able to have at Georgia when he has had the right pieces in place. Pre-JT Daniels, the quarterback play was a struggle, and it's hard to run his style of air raid quarterback with a guy like Stetson Bennett and with a guy like DeJuan Mathis, two guys that weren't particularly accurate, did not have the big arm, and could not make the throws into the tight windows. You've now seen what he can do with the proper team. And granted, he's going into a situation at Illinois where he's going to have to kind of recruit that team. I think that Illinois, they have been pretty bad on offense the last couple of years under Lovie Smith. Because again, Lovie Smith, a defensive guy, he had issues in the NFL coaching. He also had issues, and then those issues basically trickled down with him when he took the Illinois job a couple of years ago, where he was just never able to turn it around on offense and hasn't really recruited offense particularly well either. I think that Todd Munkin, of course, again, he's the offensive coordinator at Georgia. And I think that he can take some of that pedigree and Illinois will know that he's a serious guy. He's had success at what is considered the highest level in college football, being in the SEC. And his teams, for the most part, have been pretty solid, even though Georgia, because of his personnel, he was forced to be a very run-based offense, which I don't think is really his game. I mean, granted, he's used his run game very well with Zamir White and James Cook, but I think that he's much more comfortable in games where it's, JT Daniels is throwing for, he's throwing for 400 yards. I think that's the type of games that he wants to get into, but couldn't earlier this season. But once he was able to, I think that's something it'll take. It'll probably take a couple of years at Illinois, just because the team on offense that he'd be inheriting is very far from what he's trying to get at, right? I think you're going to see something. Of course, it won't be as extreme, but it's like what you're seeing currently at Mississippi State. Nobody, I don't think, thought that Mike Leach, his first year, he was going to be just a world beater, knocking everybody over in the SEC, because he inherited somebody else's team that was not like his team, right? I mean, he got a quarterback. He had a game manager quarterback that came from Stanford, which ran, you know, which runs a boring pro style offense. We got into this in the main podcast last week. And you saw the growing pains. And I think that there will be growing pains at Illinois, really, no matter who they coach or who they pick up, because I think that it would be in their best interest to shift into at least a slightly more modern offense. Because, again, I think that they can recruit the personnel to potentially do that. There's great athletes kind of up in the Midwest. And I think that they could compete for. I mean, Illinois has typically competed pretty well, even in places like Missouri. And that sort of thing. And of course, they've got East St. Louis, which Eli Drinkwitz, you know, a very good hire last year for the Tigers, has done pretty well in that area as well. And I see no reason why Illinois wouldn't be able to compete in that too. Some other names, I think one thing about it, about Illinois, that would be, is that in the past couple of coaching searches, and really across a couple of different sports, their athletic director has done, Josh Whitman, he has kind of gone for some home run hires. You saw it in basketball most recently, where he was able to, after only being at Oklahoma State for 1 year, was able to poach Brad Underwood from Oklahoma State. Brad Underwood, of course, was the head coach of Stephen F. Austin when they were extremely good and competing at a high level, you know, with guys like Thomas Walkup and that sort of thing. And he was able to do that. And so don't be surprised. Illinois, I think, will swing for Luke Fickell. I think that they would be foolish not to at least extend him the offer. Now, granted, Luke Fickell has already turned down numerous jobs, and you could argue that maybe all of them have the potential to be better than Illinois if they are not just outright better than Illinois. So I don't think that he's going to be there, but again, he's going to get a call. Lance Leipold from Buffalo, you already mentioned, he is going to get a call. He's been successful at both the Division III level to the tune of 6 national championships at Wisconsin Whitewater, one of the premier programs that I've actually seen play in person. Of course, they've taken on UMHB, which is, you know, from where I'm from in Belton, Texas. And so he's done very well at all levels. And you've seen his prolific offense, leads the NCAA in scoring this season at Buffalo. And of course, part of that is behind really just on the shoulders of Jarrett Patterson, premier running, one of the best running backs in college football this season. We talked about him again extensively in the podcast last week, just going off in his last 2 games. He's got like 700 rushing yards and 12 touchdowns or something just absolutely absurd like that. He has been a freak, but I mean, he's very good. One thing I like about Lance Leipold is that you've seen him be very good with not a lot. Cause again, you're coaching at a Division III college, you're not getting 5-star recruits, right? You go to Buffalo, you know, up there in New York, you're not getting 5-star guys, right? I mean, you're really not even getting 4-star guys up there. I mean, you're looking at 2 and 3 stars that you're able to develop. And I think that in Illinois, that is what they need. I think that he has a good pedigree. Another guy, really same conference, you could also take a potential stab at as well, as Sean Lewis. He has been kind of second fiddle in that conference behind Lance Leipold. He is the coach, of course, at Kent State. And Kent State this year, only the one loss to Leipold's Buffalo team. And even then, they put up 40 points. They just happened to give up 71 to that, again, prolific Buffalo offense. And then two last names that I want to touch on. And I feel like these are a little bit more long shots, but it's some that I've seen mentioned. And I think that they would make, you know, a fair amount of sense. First off, would be Marcus Freeman. Now, currently, Freeman is he is the defensive coordinator of Cincinnati, right? And we've all seen Cincinnati's defense this year. They have been phenomenal. They have been so good. And I think that it's possible that he could get a lift. One thing that could potentially hurt that though is that he's kind of seen as the heir apparent to Luke Fickell. When Fickell inevitably takes a bigger job, and it would have to be a significantly bigger job than Cincinnati, they're thinking that he may ascend into that position, and that is currently a better job than Illinois. If they were able to lure him away, though, I think that'd be a really nice get right there, because again, he's kind of overseen the defense with Fickell. Fickell, of course, you know, he's a defensive guy as well, so he's got some great help in that department. But Freeman's a guy that I think is destined to be a head coach in the future. And then one last guy, and possibly one of the most interesting, you know, I'm not saying this is going to happen, but I think it'd be interesting if it did, is Brett Bielema, former Arkansas coach, former coach of the Wisconsin Badgers, and current New York Giants linebackers coach. A lot of things to that would attract Bielema to this job? One guy is from Illinois, played in the Big Ten, had a lot of success coaching in the Big Ten. And I think that, you know, it's a position. He knows the area. He went to Arkansas and struggled in the SEC, right? But he had a ton of success in Wisconsin. You know, he was, of course, there really before Paul Chryst and before he went down and took the job at Arkansas. He wasn't fired. And in Wisconsin, you know, again, it's possible that he would go back potentially to having – it would depend, I guess, on who he brings in. But I think that Bielema would be a safe-ish hire for Illinois. It would allow them to get some name recognition. And it's a guy who has who has proven success over a nice period of time in the Big Ten, even though the Big Ten is a little bit different than where it was when he left many years ago.
I want to throw out a very big hypothetical, because you're talking about how the Illinois AD likes to go for the big names, right? Going for Brett Underwood and stuff like this. What if I told you right now there's an SEC coach that was on the market? He struggled a little bit at the end of his tenure, but he did pretty well against his in-state rival, kind of, and he just got let go. What if, and I'm just saying, I don't think this is a realistic thing. Is there a chance that Gus Malzahn gets a call? Why not? The dude was successful. What, like, I want to say he was successful at Auburn, but he was in probably one of the, and we talked about already, one of the toughest jobs in college football. Okay. He has money, so it may not be, it's going to have to be a good offer, but it's a one that if they want to, they can make, if he wants to make a splash higher. Two, what do you got to lose? You're in the Big Ten. It's not like you're going from SEC to the MAC. I don't know if Gus Malzahn would do it, but I think that'd be a very interesting hire. The one thing I do want to bounce off of you, though, before you go off on this Gus Malzahn idea, I'm not sure if Todd Monken would take that job, only because Georgia has a lot of those pieces that are now coming together back next year. Daniels is back. Pickens is back. That starting core that has made – that has thrashed Missouri and is showing legitimate – like such a legitimate offense is back. And if that team pulls off, darn. Now, granted – Georgia hype in 2021 is a story that you could write every year, that next year, Georgia, really good, right? We've said that one before. So it's not like this is some new thing. I would just be surprised unless Tom Monken knew that he could really revive it, like that he could probably get – they have a really good year next year. I could see Tom Monken getting a better job than Illinois. Granted, that's open if other jobs open. But still, I want you to ponder on that Gus Malzahn thing, because if he's a big name, he's out of the market, he's won games. He had a winning record at Auburn. It wasn't – and he lost – you know, he won 3 games against Nick Saban in 8 years. That's not the greatest stat ever, but it's not like a lot of other SEC coaches are topping him like that. What do you think?
Well, here's the thing. Well, first I want to talk about the kind of Todd Monken, the main reason I think that he could potentially – and again, I think that you're right. I think that he could probably get a better job, especially after next year. But a reason that he could take this Illinois job and why I think that he's more linked to this job than other jobs is because he is from Illinois. You know, he's originally from Wheaton, and it's very – you know, it's a very good possibility that he'd be able to recruit that area very well because he knows the area. So, again, it's a less popular pick, but it's one that it could potentially be kind of a sleeper pick for Illinois. As far as Malzahn, and I'll just kind of go ahead and segue this into another, I think that Malzahn can get a better job because one thing that I was kind of reading and doing research for this episode is that Malzahn, I think, is, I don't want to say he's a cool enough guy, but, I mean, he's a likable enough guy. He could do some TV analyst a la Gene Chizik, right? And he could do that for a year or two until he really finds a job that really suits his fancy. However, he's really – I mean, I wouldn't be surprised. The thing with Illinois is the type – what Illinois has is not what he wants, you know. He wants to be able to run – I mean, he kind of really pioneered the real new school RPO. He was something that he definitely had a hand in doing that, especially at the college level, you know, with guys like Nick Marshall and stuff like that a couple of years ago. And he's shown that he's not amazing at developing like quarterback talent, especially in the last couple of years. And I think that he'd really have to do that at Illinois in order to get where he wants. Illinois, unfortunately, is a team that's very entrenched based on how they've recruited the last many, many years. And just the pieces they have right now that they are very set on running a pro style offense, and which is why guys, I mean, you even see guys like the defensive coordinator for Wisconsin potentially getting a look, Jim Leonard, although I think that he won't leave Wisconsin. He's a Wisconsin grad, but that's why they're kind of thinking that may be the case, and why I've kind of discounted, and why I think the Bielema would be a potentially good hire as well, because you think that with him, he's probably bringing more of a pro style offense with whoever he brings in to run his offense again, because he's more of a defensive guy. And the other thing with Malzahn is I think that of teams that are looking for coaches right now, I think that the job that's probably most attractive to him is Arizona. Arizona, solid recruiting ground. It's kind of, you know, it's in between Texas and California, and Arizona's produced some pretty nice recruits as well. I mean, most recently, of course, you've got the running back for Texas and Bijan Robinson, and he's had a very nice second half to the year after starting a little bit slow. You know, they kind of waited and worked him in at the beginning of the season. You know, he wasn't given lead back duties necessarily, but he's done very well the last couple of games for the Horns. And I just think that, you know, it just, again, to segue into Arizona, I think that Malzahn should get a call from Arizona, because I think that the style of offense that they're running is already, it's more congruent to what he's going to run than, especially than somebody like Illinois, which is almost diametrically opposed to what he essentially runs. What he essentially ran, pardon me, at Auburn. And so, you know, I think that he's going to be one of the leading candidates. Not a whole lot of buzz necessarily on the job with Arizona. Of course, Kevin Sumlin was fired. Just, again, Kevin Sumlin, much like Will Muschamp, I feel like is kind of a program killer. Sumlin got blessed by having, you know, who is now considered offensive genius, Cliff Kingsbury, as his offensive coordinator at Houston, and then over at A&M, where he then got, you know, and developed Johnny Manziel. Into a Heisman winner, and had very good quarterback recruiting. But then it's like once Kingsbury left, the wheels really fell off at A&M. It became very clear that he was more of a charlatan, if you will. And then you saw that carry over to Arizona, where again, he's able to recruit an incredible quarterback talent in Khalil Tate, and then just completely, you know, just completely squander his career. I mean, Khalil Tate had Heisman level talent coming out of high school, and Sumlin, much like he did with a handful of guys in a couple of years at Texas A&M, was able to take that and squander it. You know, I mean, you look at a wide list of names, and again, some of the people that A&M had, you know, it was some of their own doing. I mean, you had Kenny Hill, of course, who I believe got arrested, but I mean, even still, you had guys like Kyle Allen, Kyler Murray, and guys that he was not able to make it work with over a long period of time after Manziel. After that, it's like no quarterback could take hold, and he torpedoed, you know, all of their careers, or he pushed them out. You know, Murray, of course, eventually went and fulfilled his Heisman potential at Oklahoma, one of A&M's, you know, former big rivals. But I mean, A&M doesn't like losing guys to Oklahoma. I mean, it's something that definitely stings. And so again, that's kind of why he got fired. You saw in Arizona, he just did not do very well, plain and simple. I mean, I think his record was like 9-20 or something like that for the Wildcats in a Pac-12 conference that is not that bad, that is not that good. You know what I'm saying? So that job is, I think, a job that's not terrible. Like the Illinois job, I think, is tough. I think the Big Ten combined with what Illinois currently has, that is going to be a tougher job. Arizona, I think, is a much more attractive job, and I think that that's why you're seeing Malzahn being linked to it. And then we were talking kind of before the show, you know, two other guys, and you know, tell me your thoughts on this one. Of course, we have Jay Norvell, who's been at Nevada for a fair amount of time, and he's had some nice success there. He's been at Nevada at least the last 3 or 4 years, started in 2017, but he's had a lot of stops and has really done well there at Nevada. But one guy that I wanted to talk about, and the guy who currently his head coaching record is only 14-29, but a guy who I think could potentially be a big pickup for a school like Arizona, is Brent Brennan, head coach of San Jose State. Is, you know, if you're not familiar with San Jose State, basically they were terrible. They were just bottom barrel of the Mountain West Conference, right? First year, you know, he goes 2-11. Second year, 1-11. Then the third year, he goes 5-7, nearly makes a bowl. And then in 2020, with, I mean, just casts off left and right. I mean, former A&M and Arkansas quarterback Nick Starkel running the show for San Jose State. He's at 6-0, tied for first in the Mountain West Conference. And so the only thing I would say with him, Jerry, is that, you know, you may say, well, it's 1 year. But, I mean, you saw after – once his – you know, the guys that he recruited his first year, you know, are now starting to get to be juniors and next year would be seniors. All of a sudden, you know, you see a team that looks very good. And I think that a lot of the San Jose State stuff that he's been able to pick up there as far as recruiting and developing players, I feel like that's something that Arizona could use, the development and stuff like – and that sort of thing. And I think that makes him very attractive to this Arizona job.
My thing with the Arizona job is, like, there is a lot of potential here. It's very interesting. But I don't know how much money they have left to work with. The reason being is one of the biggest things that the AD said is he's looking for a young head coach with an offensive background who could do more with less in the short term. And I think Stephen Curry put this really well. I have to be careful, though. He said, this is the AD coach where we are broke. Don't ask. I think that's pretty funny. So I could see the guy from San Diego State, San Jose State getting a look, right? Just because you don't got bread.
He checks all the boxes.
You know, they need the money. Young, they need someone that's not going to give a lot. That's why that would be the reason I'm not sure if Gus Malzahn would take that job though in return. Because dude's coming off a nice contract. Jimmy Sexton's not going to let him walk for cheap because we all know how that buyout looked. Like wherever he goes is going to be expensive. That's why I thought maybe Illinois would say we're gonna pony up for the craziness if it's a hard job, because money talks. I don't know. I think that the San Jose State guy, that's the go-to. That should be your number one target. That's who you should be eyeing like a hawk, right? I don't think there's my other. You could go for like Chuck Cecil. He was an Arizona legend, former All-American. He's NFL defensive coordinator right now, or he's been one. And he's been in like an analyst role in and out for the last 3 years, but he's 56. He's a little older. If you want someone younger, right, then you got to go there. So that job, I think, it's attractive, but it's going to be really, do you give another big contract, right? Kevin Sumlin's buyout was $7.29 million. They may not have to pay the whole thing because of contract clauses, but like, that's not cheap. And Arizona has some of that fund, but they don't have SEC funds. They don't have the SEC money rolling in, whether it's just TV money or booster money. So they're going to be pretty careful with this job, which I think is super interesting. So those are the jobs that are still open. Let's do the probably the most fun part of all of this, right? Or am I missing one?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, we got to talk about Auburn.
Jesus, Jerry, I might get fired from this, even though like I don't even hold like a. You know, I employ myself. The big one, the big old Auburn. Auburn, Auburn, Auburn. Oh my God. this is a job that is so attractive yet so scary at the same time, right? Like, it is Auburn. I don't think there's any better way to describe it like that. This has so many pros. You're in the middle of Alabama, you're the heart of the SEC, you have a passionate fan base, you have good alumni, you have so many things that are in your favor, but in return, Nick Saban's your arch rival, and the Iron Bowl is a big deal, right? If you're losing Iron Bowls, that does not help your case no matter how good your season is. You're also in the SEC West right now, and the SEC West has LSU on the come up. Granted, we're not going to say they're amazing anymore, but they have a very good recruiting class coming in. Your recruiting class, on the other hand, not on that level. You still have Alabama and Texas A&M with Jimbo Fisher, who's made that program right now. It's the number 5 team in the nation. You have some very stiff competition that you are walking into, whoever – even if it is Hugh Freeze, which I would despise but understand at this point because we just let anything happen in this world, it's the SEC. That's a really, really hard job. Like, and what I find super, super interesting about this now is I had heard very early rumblings, you're hearing it more now that this has happened, that, okay, people in Tennessee are not loving Jeremy Pruitt. And there was some, you know, there are people being like, hey, Auburn doesn't fire Malzahn, they're going to fire Pruitt next year to get Freeze. Go for the big, big swing, because that's what Tennessee does. They want to go back to those days where everyone's bleeding orange. Like there was a swing for that moment. Now, Jerry Pruitt, even though he just won his last game, is already now, his seat now feels just hotter because of this. Because as much as I hate to admit it, Hugh Freeze is the guy. He's the guy people want. And yeah, he could sign his contract to Liberty. He said all the right things, like I want to be there, but he don't care. He wants to win, and he wants to win now. If Auburn gives him the opportunity, I know he'd take a shot. He's probably one of the most annoying coaches, but yet one of the most successful. He has a great offense. He figures that stuff out. Hugh Freeze is the guy who's going to be looking at this job, and Auburn's going to be looking at that him right back. Alex, you talked to me earlier a bit about one of their in-house people maybe getting the shot at this job. Tell me more.
Yeah, I mean, one thing that it seemed to have been picking up a little bit of steam, at least this morning, was their head coach and their defensive coordinator, that would be an interim head coach, and that is Kevin Steele. And he has been one of their more important assistants since he got there basically in 2016. He's their defensive coordinator. And I think that Auburn, you know, of course, it's potential, you know, he's very respected around, especially the Auburn, not only in Auburn, but also around the country as a guy who's done a pretty solid job with their defense. Because really, you look at both the defensive recruiting for Auburn as well as the defensive product. I mean, you've got tons of guys that were drafted last year. You know, I believe that they had the number 7th draft pick, and his name is escaping. He went to the Panthers. He was a giant defensive tackle. And then, of course, you had Noah Igbinoghene, who was drafted at the end of the first round by the Dolphins. And he has consistently had a very good, if nothing else, he's had a very good front 7 in run defense pretty much every single, you know, the last couple of years that he's been at Auburn. So that wouldn't surprise me, except for the fact that I think that Auburn, I'm with you. I think that Auburn is going to go with an offensive guy, unfortunately, for Kevin Steele, because I think that Kevin Steele would be a fine fit. Although I look, you know, of course, it's very hard for you to look at other guys that are available or who could potentially be available and give it to him. Because, I mean, I've just written down a couple of names, just guys kind of from around the area, of course, because, again, the guy, Hugh Freeze, of course, has had incredible success with Liberty and has done so most recently with guys that Auburn's kind of cast off, you know. Quarterback for Liberty right now, Malik Willis, was an Auburn transfer. So I think that not only has he had a lot of success, he's had a lot of success doing Auburn-type things with Auburn-type players. And I think that's something that is very important. You look at some other guys, too, I think no doubt should get a look. One guy, Billy Napier, current head coach of Louisiana. You've seen the upward trajectory of that program the last couple of years. They've taken a little bit of a step back this year, but I don't want to say they've taken a step back. I really think it's more of Coastal Carolina, of course, took a big leap forward. Jeremy Chadwell is a guy who I think may be able to flirt with this job as well, but I still think that I'm not sure that he will go after just one really successful season at Coastal. I think that he will probably stay put there. And then another guy that I didn't really think about up until really doing my research earlier today, but a guy who I think could be potentially a pretty good fit is Bill Clark, who is currently the head coach at Alabama Birmingham, the UAB Blazers. He, I believe, has he has slightly longer odds in the betting markets than Billy Napier, who is, of course, behind Hugh Freeze. But I think that he could be a very good, nice pickup as well, because he's done pretty well at a couple of different levels, both at the FCS level and the FBS level. And in 2018, he was 11-3 in the conference USA. And he's had a bowl game pretty much all three seasons that he's been the coach of there. He's, you know, he's around the area, of course. He's already in Alabama with Birmingham, so he knows the area, would be able to recruit. I think that could be potentially a good pickup too. But just to reiterate, I think that Hugh Freeze is going to get offered the job. And he's even as far as today, you've seen a couple of hours ago, I'm not sure if you saw this, but I mean, even Kirk Herbstreit himself has endorsed Hugh Freeze for the job.
You know, this is the thing. He's just winning games, and it's tough to look away from a guy who had success, especially at Ole Miss before everything went down tumbling. Here are some things I saw that were interesting. I'm looking again at another Athletic article, which I think you're just tired of me talking about them. So there's three names, two that I've read right now, one that I heard on a podcast, I don't remember which one, that have somehow floated around this job. I don't know how realistic. The first one, which I think is crazy, Mario Cristobal from Oregon. That would just be wild. The second one.
I saw that as well. I feel like they can't get rid of – Oregon will not allow Cristobal to walk like that, I don't think. I think – because I've seen that too, and I was pretty – yeah.
Hey, it depends on his agent, man. This is one of the few times that, like – if he wants out, he can find his way out. I think that's I think that's the case with like almost anybody at any job. If they really wanted to walk out, they could walk out. It just, it'd be interesting. The second one, Lane Kiffin is getting a look already a year after Ole Miss and Elijah Moore and Matt Corral have just turned it on. That is mentioned in this article. I think that'd just be wow. That'd be really, Lane Kiffin's a character, right? Some people love him, some people don't. Wow, would that just, that would make him a story. That'd be, he'd turn into a 30 for 30 documentary if he takes this job. And the third one, somehow, I don't know how realistic this is, but I think his name would get thrown around a little bit more than he deserves. James Franklin. I'd seen things about James Franklin. Maybe like there's a slim chance. Obviously, the reason why these big names are getting this mention is because this is a big time program. So anybody at some of these bigger jobs, or very big jobs, might get a look. I don't know if Franklin leaves Penn State, but there is a case for it. My case being right now, they suck, they're not playing well, and the recruiting class is nowhere where they expect it to be. I could also see that be a reason why maybe Auburn doesn't even look his way. I think Kiffin will be a fun one. That's the 30 for 30 guy. Cristobal's weirdly the one that I think could happen, only because you've already heard, like, there's been chirpings of it. And, like, yeah, his agent hasn't talked to him about it yet, but things just happen around this. And there is a weird lore about if you can bring Auburn back that you are basically a legend, right? Not even just how to say bring it back, but if you're on that line with Alabama, you're right up there with Nick Saban, you're going to be a coaching legend. It does not matter. If you can somehow contain, not like get anywhere near what Nick Saban is doing in Alabama, you will have that job forever. And so I think it's super interesting. You're going to see a lot of big names here. Out of those three, Alex, which one intrigues you the most? Which one's most realistic?
Ah, man. Well, I mean, it's really just so hard because, again, even compared to those three guys, I still look at Hugh Freeze. But I think that James Franklin's probably the most interesting. I don't think it will happen just because I think that he's fairly locked into Penn State, even though Penn State has not been very good this year, although they've shown signs of life the last couple of weeks. So I would say that it has to be Mario Cristobal, because I think that he's done a very nice job at Oregon. Oregon, a program that had kind of floundered a little bit after the, you know, of course, after the departure of Chip Kelly. You know, they were very much up and down. They weren't just the perennial BCS contender that they were before, back when it was still, the BCS National Championship. And Cristobal's done a nice job there, and he's recruited incredibly well. He's been very competitive recruiting and very highly contestable areas. But, I mean, I still just look. And again, the biggest thing at Auburn is you're looking at guys who could beat Nick Saban, because that's what matters at the end of the day at Auburn. You got to win games, and you got to win that game. And I look at available coaches, you know, and keyword being available, you know, because they're not going to get a Dabo Swinney. Right. I mean, it's just not going to happen. They're not going to get Dabo Swinney. You look at guys who are available that have beaten Nick Saban. There is Hugh Freeze right there. Right. And so I just think and that, you know, just to kind of go ahead and go into one little thing that I didn't even put on the document, a little secret segment that I didn't tell Jerry about with Hugh Freeze leaving, because I think that it's becoming evident that whether he gets this job or goes to another one. You know, because again, I think that he's going to get a call from most solid jobs. He's going to get a call from, because again, he's done incredibly well at Liberty, a team that had nothing essentially when he got there, right? Basically did his penance, I guess you could say, with the college football world at Liberty, and really has resurrected his career, I think, because again, he's had incredible success there after building up a nice Ole Miss program. But that begs the question now, who could potentially be going to Liberty? Because Liberty, you know, there's nothing they
don't
like
you
more
say
than
it.
A little redemption
Don't you say
story.
It. Don't
See,
you,
you know
say
I'm
it.
Saying it, because we did talk about it a little bit. Jerry, you mentioned to me earlier, as I was looking up, we were doing our research separately, but Jerry happened to mention that it is official that Art Briles, former Baylor head coach, was ousted really due to a university-wide problem regarding, you know, sexual assault. Of course, some of it was in the football team. Some of it had been debunked, but some of it was very much still real, and he ended up taking the brunt of that. And he's been out of coaching college football ever since, but it's had some decent success. Of course, he was knocked out in, I believe, the state semifinals last week, either the state semifinals or the state quarterfinals at Mount Vernon in the 3A division. and 3A Division One, where his team was again beaten last week, and he has tendered his resignation at Mount Vernon. And here's the thing about Art Briles. I think that Art Briles' coaching merit is there. Again, he didn't get fired at Baylor, and I've said this multiple times on the podcast. He didn't get fired at Baylor because he wasn't doing well, right? And there is an argument to be made, and you've made it before, at least with Hugh Freeze, saying, well, you know, somebody who's messed up like that, are we going to give him a chance? Now, it's one thing for a guy like Hugh Freeze to go and take a job at Liberty, right? Liberty, they were paying him a cush, you know, $2 million-something a year, so he wasn't exactly – you know, he wasn't living as lavishly as he was at Ole Miss. He was still making it. You want to know what – you don't want to know how much Art Briles was making coaching at Mount Vernon? Two-year contract, $80,000. $80,000. You know what you know how much he made in his last season at Baylor? $6.2 million. It does not get – I mean, you want to talk about like a humbling experience. I mean, there it is right there. I mean, there was nobody who took a bigger step down after the 2015 season than Art Briles in terms of pay, in terms of reputation. I mean, it just could not happen, right? And I think that he's a guy that deserves another chance. Because, and again, we talked about it, so I'm not going to harp on it too much, but I feel like Art Briles is in a position, not that I think that, I don't think that that's who Art Briles is. I don't think that he was somebody who was, you know, condoning it and, you know, saying like, oh yeah, this is fine to happen. You know, it was just a classic where something is wrong and you don't jump on it immediately. And I think that's really what happened with Baylor. But again, his offensive merit has always been there. And I think taking a job like a Liberty, or if one of these other coaches, you know, ends up leaving, like say like a Billy Napier leaves, or, you know, someone like that, or a Bill Clark, I think it's possible you see him take a job right there. Cause again, he's been, you know, pretty successful in a very short term with Mount Vernon in Texas. And he's a guy that had tons of success, not only recruiting at Baylor, but also just winning games. Cause that, you know, that's the other half of the battle. Of course, half the battle is recruiting. The other half is you've got to take those good recruits and go and win some games. And Baylor became, you know, what was a powerhouse after that. And once he left, Baylor torpedoed. I mean, it was, again, not all because of Art Briles. There was a lot of people that left because of course they had lots of sanctions from the NCAA and that sort of thing. And that obviously hurt them. I'm not going to discredit that, but I mean, you have not seen Baylor put up the points that they put up with Art Briles since then. Not under any coach. And so I think that his merit as a coach is there. And I think that he could be potentially Liberty's next redemption story. Again, I don't know if he'd go to Liberty. I don't know if he would try and, you know, I don't know if he'll go somewhere else. But I think that he's somebody that as far, you know, I just put kind of big names on the board. And I would say that he's there, you know. And again, I feel like it's a genuine comeback that he's trying to make, because again, he could have even went and potentially been like an offensive coordinator somewhere, but he ended up, what he did is he went over to Italy for a year and then he went and coached high school football at a 3A Division I school in Texas, which has six divisions, right? You're looking at schools that have like maybe 150 people per class, per graduating class, like somewhere like in that range relatively, right? So I think that that was a definitely a humbling experience for Art Briles. And again, I think that he's a fantastic coach. And I think that, you know, he made a mistake, which, you know, many people have done. I mean, what Hugh Freeze done, and we're talking about how he's the hottest name on the coaching block right now. And so I see no reason why Art Briles would not get another chance.
It's interesting because it's part of me, I don't want to see him get another chance. It's more that, you know, and I've made this point before, like, yeah, people make mistakes, but there's mistakes that like, hey, okay, you coached a bad game, life goes on. Hey, you let something really fester below you. And not, even if you didn't know everything, you probably knew more than people let on, or you knew enough. So it's really hard for me to, like, personally be a fan of it. But coaching merit, like I think you said, obviously, it's like he has the skill to do this. This is not a guy that's going to be walking in anywhere not knowing what he's doing. He's a great coach. But I don't know. He'll probably get the job at Liberty because Liberty doesn't care. They'll do whatever they want to do to win. I don't know how it'll go down. I one of the things that I'm also not as versed in Art Briles' problems and Baylor's issues that I was in Ole Miss's and Hugh Freeze's. I just had researched the Hugh Freeze stuff way more in the past. So that was because I was really interested in just kind of like the money part of it, like paying guys, stuff like that. So in reality, I don't know as much about the Art Briles and Baylor problems that were going on there, so I don't want to make comments that on things I don't know as much about. You know, again, but I've made this before. This is college football. Is at the end of the day, people will sell their souls for winning. It's frustrating to me, but what do I know? This is why I'm behind a microphone on a Zoom call and I'm not coaching Auburn. Like, there's a reason I'm not in these positions, and there's a reason I don't have $20 million to buy out Gus Malzahn and even make this a conversation, right? So is coaching merit exist? Do I think he deserves it? I would lean to no, but to each their own. I don't know enough about this to make a valid critique argument or point on his merits outside of football. But speaking of hot seats outside of Liberty, if Liberty were to walk away, we have a couple going here. The first one, we're going to go a little lower here, but an interesting program, I'd say the least, Syracuse with Dino Babers. Thing about Syracuse, I think I saw that he it's got like a small vote for next year. I'm not sure on that, but I thought I saw something around there being him getting a small vote in conference. But Syracuse has been a laughingstock. They've been a joke. One of the teams that Hugh Freeze beat in their mini ACC run this year. You know, that's a job that's also just going to be very challenging if it were to ever open up. Syracuse feels a lot like Illinois. You're in the state of New York, right? You're not in New York City, at least, but you have some talent in New York City. Probably not a lot. It's not bad. You know, it's a basketball school for a reason. And you don't even have the Big East to fall on anymore, which used to kind of be like a fun thing. Granted, it wasn't a football conference, but I think some of Syracuse's identity on both sides of the basketball world and football world died with the Big East more than I think other schools. So it's kind of weird for me with Syracuse to, you know, outside maybe playing in the Carrier Dome, what else do you got going for you? You know, they don't have anything that I think is super special.
Yeah, and you look at Dino Babers' merit, of course, 2 years ago in 2018, he went 10-3, right? And you're like, and you're thinking, wow, they're going to take the next step up. You know, they've got Tommy. You know, they had, of course, their quarterback Dungy ended up graduating, and he was kind of the one that propelled them to that 10-3. But they were like, oh, you know, we've got this great guy, Tommy DeVito. You know, he's going to step in and he's going to take us to that next level. And that next level that we saw that the following year was 5-7. So you're like, wow, that was interesting, right? Like, you know, maybe he just needed a second year. And then we see 1-10 this year. And all of a sudden you're looking at Dino Babers as a whole. And if you're looking at his record outside of 2018, you've got 4-8, 4-8, 5-7, 1-10. Right. So it's something to definitely look at. And that's one of the reasons why I think that he could potentially be on the hot seat. He did get a little vote of confidence as well. But again, I mean, sometimes they will do that. They will do that sort of thing. And we're going to be talking about a guy, I guess we can go ahead and talk about him next, who's also gotten a vote of confidence, but from a school that has given a vote of confidence before and then, you know, turned around and fired them, and Tom Herman. But Dino Babers, I think it's kind of run its course at Syracuse. I just don't see them getting a whole lot better. I think if he were going to develop some quarterback, like, I think it would have happened, right? I mean, he's been there now. I believe this is like a sixth season or something like that. So it's definitely unfortunate for Babers, because I was somebody who was really high on him. But here in season five, he's sitting at 1-10. And he didn't have, you know, it wasn't like he had an exorbitant amount of people leave the program and graduate and stuff like that. Again, I mean, one of the most notable people that left his program was, you know, graduated 2 years ago. And he has not been replaced, right? So I think that that's something that's inherently tough for Babers. He just hasn't been able to develop. And with Syracuse in the ACC, like, you have to be able to develop, right? That's kind of one of the hallmarks of the job at Syracuse. But then again, going back to people who have also received a vote of confidence, but I'd still say is on, you know, reasonably on the hot seat, got to look at Tom Herman from Texas, because when is a Texas coach not on the hot seat? Herman, really, from a record standpoint, has not been, you know, they haven't been horrible, right? Like, they've been decent. I mean, heck, they've even been decent this year. Record of 6-3 is not terrible. But at Texas, obviously, there's the history of being there. And you haven't seen an incredible boost, you know. I mean, of course, after Mack Brown, you know, they got rid of Mack Brown after an 8-5 season, which was, you know, his worst season he'd ever had there. He was there from 98 to 2013. And the worst season that you ever saw out of Mack Brown was, well, there was a 5-7 in 2010 and then 8-5 twice, right? And so you have a very solid program. And then, of course, they went with Charlie Strong, and that was a failure, 3 straight losing seasons. And then you see Tom Herman, he went 10-4 in his second season in 2018. But again, they haven't taken that step up. They, in a real sense, they are not competing with Oklahoma. Yes, because Oklahoma is Texas's arch rival in the Big 12, they are going to compete in game with Oklahoma. They are going to write, no matter how bad they are, even in the Charlie Strong years, they competed with Oklahoma because that game means everything to them. The Red River River rivalry is one of the biggest games of the year. So, of course, they're going to show up and play that. But in a real sense, they have not taken that next step up into challenging them really for a Big 12 championship. And, of course, Texas fans, much like Auburn fans, well, even more so, they've got a quick trigger when it comes to coaches. You know, they're not seeing those, they're not seeing the 11-1, the 13-0, you know, the 10-3, the 10-3, the 12-1 that you saw with Mac Brown. And so you're going to have that, unfortunately. And, you know, as unfortunate as it is, that is something that you are going to have to deal with at Texas. But because of that, I've got to put him on that. I think that he is on the hot seat. Because, I mean, he was low-key on the hot seat last year, and he's relatively done the exact same this season at 6-3.
I think the Todd Herman situation is fascinating because you have so many factors going on that just make this even better. First of all, like you said, it's Texas. And Texas has historically been successful, has the funds, it has literally everything you can think of, right? So when you think of the Texas job, you're like, wow, like, you know, this should be a plug and play for any good coach. Then he's done it just good enough. 8-5, he's not losing, and not having losing seasons, but he's not being what the Texas, you know, standard is, which is basically perfection. And what really hurt him was he had two things happen around the same time. First of all, you have Quinn Ayers, who decommits. Because one thing that was saving Todd Herman from, I think, even a hotter seat was the fact that Ayers – didn't Ayers decommit? Quinn Ayers?
Yeah, Quinn Ewers. Yeah, he did. He's you know, they've been getting guys sniped left and right really the last couple of weeks.
You gave me the no-nod, and you scared me.
Like, oh, no, I thought my microphone wasn't working. I was seeing if it was picking me up.
You scared me. Like, Jesus Christ. I'm like, I'm not that wrong.
Yeah, no, Quinn Ewers did decommit. Of course, he currently, you know, according to like 247 and ESPN, has a perfect 100 rating as far as recruit. Of course, tied like with the highest, you know, ever, obviously, is a perfect 5-star. And yeah, he did flip. I mean, he's a guy that's from Texas and was committed. He was like a Texas, I want to say he was even maybe a Texas legacy. Like, he'd been a guy that had been pegged to Texas forever. And then well, actually, I'd rather win, you know. And
that's the crazy thing.
Yeah, and
let me add on this. And then let's add on to this. Oh yeah, Urban Meyer may be coming back. They flirt publicly with Urban Meyer. Urban Meyer's, and then that kind of dies. So now he has Todd Herman put himself in a bad spot. The people around him are kind of like, I don't want to say the people around him, but the boosters and everybody else are literally publicly flirting with another candidate, which kind of, I think, forced either a firing or a vote of confidence. And I think the fact that they were not confident in getting Urban Meyer, they said, we'll give him one more year. That's super interesting because this almost feels like it was a necessity. Usually votes of confidence aren't, I want to say, always a necessity, but sometimes are more just like, hey, we had a tough season, but we don't want to give up on it just yet. This is more like, if we don't give it to him, he's gone, right? I could have almost seen it like, I don't know if you've heard this story. I heard early when one of the reasons Barry Odom got fired was because he asked for a vote of confidence from Sterk. And then Sterk didn't give it to him, so he left. Or, like, he started telling everybody that he was going to get fired, which caused this. It was a trickle-down effect. I could have seen the same thing happening to Tom Herman if he feels that he has no confidence at all. So this public vote is, like, I don't want to say it's false, but it's more like it was a necessity to kind of keep things in line for one more year. I think it's just super interesting because Herman hasn't done a horrible job, but he's obviously not done the Texas standard. And that's it. There's so much going on with it. He has one more year to prove it. One thing I'd heard, I was listening to One True Pod about the Big 12, and they had one of the beat writers from Austin. He goes, yeah, one of the things I think that'd be going on is entitlement. You know, you remember the quote that Matt Campbell throws around with Iowa State. It's a 5-star culture versus 5-star talent, right? And yeah, there's 5-star kids that still walk into Texas's door every year. But there's a sense of entitlement. There's a sense of, like, I've made it to Texas. Getting the offer from Texas means more than going and winning at Texas. And I don't know if that's how true that is, right? You know, I don't want to question every player on that team. I want to say Sam Ellinger just didn't care and felt like he deserved everything. But, you know, there is probably something around that. Like, hey, I've got, like, getting the offer and playing for Texas, at least for some of these in-state kids where you need to win, feel like, hey, I got it. I did what I had to do. I don't have to work as hard now. I don't have to push for everything else. I've gotten the thing that was, you know, like, I've gotten the crown jewel already. And if the crown jewel is the offer, not the winning, then it doesn't matter what coach you bring in there until that changes. And I think that's going to be super interesting in general. I want to talk about another interesting situation, because all of these are. And we're going to talk about two more perfect guys who are supposed to be perfect head coach hires. The first one being Jim Harbaugh, the Michigan man, the khaki man, the mask boner man. Like, absolutely just all over the place. I've vented, I think our first episode together, I completely vented my frustration of Michigan to the heavens, which is the Big Ten needs Michigan to look better, right? Like, if it, we're looking at Ohio State this year at number 4 in the college football playoff, and it's, who do they play, right? Well, if Michigan was what they used to be, or some of what they would be, and they played that game, or at least if that game was, like, meant anything, right, the cancellation of it would have meant something even more, right? They canceled the game and no one cared. That's horrible. Granted, you know, I'm not mad about the cancellation. I want everyone to be safe. But the fact that the public consensus was, yeah, Michigan probably is better off not playing in the most important game they play every year speaks volumes to where the situation's at. Jim Harbaugh, like, they might give him one more year because I think he's on his last year of his deal. But what do you want? What has he shown to anybody that he is worth what he's worth is my question.
Yeah, and I mean, it's completely valid. And it's something that we have seen across. I mean, and we've talked about it in every show that we've talked about Michigan, right? I'm a big Michigan hater. You are somebody who's been very disappointed in Harbaugh. I wouldn't say you're a Michigan hater, but you're a Harbaugh hater, if anything else. You hate that what he's done with the program, essentially. But, I mean, you can look at any quantifiable metric in Harbaugh's system. You can just look it up, you know. Games against good teams, games against mediocre teams on the road, games against good teams on the road where he hadn't won it's like he hadn't won a game. He's just not beating the teams he needs to beat. He's struggled against Michigan State, who is, again, not that good of a program, and he struggled against them. He has struggled mightily against any team that is good. I mean, I'm not sure that he's beaten Penn State. I know he hasn't beaten Ohio State. And really, the last couple of years, those games hadn't even really been competitive. So Michigan is going in the wrong direction, and I think that, you know, this is, I believe, the last year of his contract, and I don't think that Michigan would be good to extend him. Michigan's actually in a pretty good position this year because I believe if they don't have to extend him, you know, they're not going to have to pay a buyout. You know, they're not firing him necessarily. They're saying, hey, we're not going to renew you. And so that will look good on their balance sheet, at least. You know, balance sheet, shout out to my accounting exam that I had yesterday, and I did well enough to make a B-. So, you know, had to shout myself out right there because that was an incredible performance. But, I mean, you look at that, and – yes, and that's something that I think is also in, I guess it's not in Harbaugh's favor, it's quite the opposite. You know, if Harbaugh still had 2-3 years on his deal, Michigan may ride it out this year, you know, and hope that it gets better. But we just hadn't seen it, right? I mean, he's been there a couple of years, and we just have not seen the growth. His model of coaching, it just doesn't really mesh well with the college game. And I think that's something you've seen. And you know, I've even seen stuff saying that, like, you know, Harbaugh might, you know, he might get removed at Michigan and then go try and get the Jets job, right? And maybe. I think that he, you can just look at it. I think that he's a better NFL coach than he is a college coach. And I think that that's, you know, something that, that's an argument that you could potentially make with Harbaugh. So that's just my opinion. I think that Harbaugh is just not – He's not been what Michigan wanted him to be. And I think that that's really the reason why. Because, again, you look at strictly his record, his overall record, and you're like, well, he's not that bad, right? But with Michigan's expectations every year and their expectations that they need to be competing with Ohio State, competing for Big Ten championships, and I have not seen that under Harbaugh's tenure. And so with that, I mean, I don't think there's, you know, again, we've talked about Jim Harbaugh and pretty much every single episode we've done since the Big Ten, we found out they're playing again. So I don't think that there's a whole lot much else to say. But, Jerry, I know you've got something to say about this next one because you were even on it before me. But, I mean, the last couple of weeks, I've been seeing it more and more with the man, Justin Fuente, you know, starting a little bit hot at Virginia Tech, the seat of Justin Fuente. So I've got to put him on there because I'm starting to see it, you know, in just kind of like the forums and stuff like that for Virginia Tech, as well as even, you know, it's making its way into some, you know, mainstream news media. That Justin Fuente, it's possible, is on the hot seat.
Well, I think ever since Justin Fuente flirted with Baylor, his seat got warm. Because, and we're seeing this a bit with South Satterfield. I put it on our sheet. We may not talk about it, or if we, like, do talk about it, it'll be very quick. But what Satterfield just recently talked to South Carolina about their job opening when it was open. And you know what that did to Louisville fans? Pissed them off, right? And that's one thing you don't want to do because, okay, and I said this, I think, last week. It's not like the Baylor job is 100 times better than Virginia Tech. So he was talking to these guys, and he's trying to make this point, or, like, you know, he's making this move, and then it doesn't happen. And then they start losing. And I get it. This year they've had a very, very tough season with the pandemic, probably one of the most hard-hit programs, at least in terms of numbers of kids, players, and just, you know, positioning. But you can't do – his seat was warm. They start losing. And he's not, you know, he doesn't have favor with those people like the guy before him did in Frank Beamer, you know. And that's also one of the things that was really hard about this job is these guys, a lot of people at Virginia Tech are very used to a guy who is loved. And when you love somebody, it's hard to see them go. They don't love Fuente like they love Beamer. He's the guy right after Beamer. You know, next year is going to be super important for him because if he kind of picks the pieces back up, I think this wasn't a bad Virginia Tech team. They were ranked at one point. They looked pretty good, but they fell off that cliff, and part of that was COVID, and part of it was just not preparing and doing their job. They don't pull up next year. They don't show up next year. You know, he's going to be the in-between piece, and I thought when at first I said we're going to go to guys who are perfect fit hires, right, I was going to talk about Scott Frost, who we'll talk about next. But Fuente is also in that category. People are like Fuente is one of the best hires that Virginia Tech could have made. This is a great move, and it's not working out. And it does not help when you talk to other guys. I know this is a year-old thing, but that matters when you're not winning, right? If Fuente was 9-3 and working his job up, right, and being successful, that's huge. And the other thing that's biting Fuente in the butt, and the same thing that's biting Baylor's at Syracuse, is the ACC is getting better. Right now, you saw North Carolina absolutely trample Miami, but Miami's still a good team. I know. Granted, maybe I overrated them a bit, and they may be going down a little bit of a cliff, but unless they don't tumble, right, and fall down, whatever, they're still relevant. Clemson's Clemson. Florida State still isn't what it is, but, like, and NC State, weirdly, did enough. There is still competition in the ACC. This is not the same ACC where Virginia Tech's at the top like you're used to, and that's a problem. And then when you're used to some of that success and you're seeing the people across the street in Clemson build this beautiful facility, start winning recruits, going to national title games, then you see a guy in North Carolina, Mack Brown, walk in and become and gather success. You see Miami only lose two games on their schedule. That frustrates you even more because that's supposed to be you. So I know it's a little bit a lot on Fuente and that maybe his seat's not as hot as I'm perceiving it, but there's a lot of things going in their favor. And when we talked about Will Muschamp getting fired, they said one of the reasons you fire Will Muschamp is because you don't want to lose money in the future. I can see the same thing with Fuente. If people don't mess with him, don't go to games, you're losing money in the future. There's a lot of things against Justin Fuente. He's going to really have to prove it next year. Alex, anything else you have about Fuente? Or do you want to move on to Scott Frost?
Yeah, I mean, I think you hit it right on the head. And again, I think that the main point that we're making is if you watched the podcast last week, I think that you perceived his seat is much hotter than it is, and I perceived it as much cooler than it is. And I think that we're gradually becoming to, I think, the reality, which is I want to say he doesn't get let go this season. But I think that next season, at the beginning of the season, his seat is going to be hot. I think that if he does not perform next season, I think that's going to be it for him at Virginia Tech. And Scott Frost, I mean, I don't even feel like there's a whole lot to talk about. Nebraska was a struggling program when he got there. Scott Frost, of course, formerly national championship, quote unquote, winning coach at UCF, where he led them to a couple perfect, and just some really great seasons down there. And Scott Frost, it just has not translated at Nebraska. Now, one thing that's in favor of Scott Frost that I will say, Nebraska doesn't really have as much flexibility as a team that like Auburn apparently does with paying, you know, like a $21 million buyout to Gus Malzahn. But one thing that Scott Frost can do is Scott Frost can move some pieces around, because he's still got a lot of his same staff that he brought with him from Central Florida. And I think that he could potentially clean his program up in that regard and potentially see some results. Like because again, Nebraska, much like Texas, is a historic program in football. And what they're doing right now, it's just, I mean, it's not a good look for Nebraska. They're angry, and rightfully so. But Scott Frost, I think, only because he hasn't been there a whole long time, I think that as long as he makes some staff adjustments this year, I think he's probably in the clear.
Yeah, and the thing with Frost is, like, we said it with both Harbaugh and Fuente, is he was supposed to be this perfect fit hire, and he's not doing that. Nebraska also, and this is going to sound mean, they need to temper their expectations. Nebraska hasn't been good for a while now, and there's a reason for that. People don't want to go to Nebraska like they used to. They don't have the Florida pipeline that they once did. They're not the program that we're used to. We cannot just keep making it. You know, it's hard for us to, like, be like, oh, yeah, Fuente, do it, or not Fuente, oh, yeah, Frost, make it all happen. You know, this is easy, big money. Just because Nebraska used to be good at one point, they haven't recaptured that success. And, you know, you can't go – and I think one of the things that hurts them more than – and it's going to sound weird – is they cling on to that success as a fan base so much, that 90s, 80s success. I don't remember – were you born when Nebraska was good? No, you weren't, Alex. Neither was I, right? Or if they, whenever they were good, I don't remember it, and there's a reason for it. I think part of that's one of the weird reasons at Texas, right? The last time Texas was – well, super good was like when they went to the Sugar Bowl that one year. But they haven't been good for a little bit, you know, and you can't just – go back and be like, we have history. Not everyone cares about history. And this is the perfect case example is at Nebraska. Yes, you were a powerhouse in the 90s. But you know what? The U was a powerhouse. That doesn't mean that they became instantly successful again. It's just kind of weird to figure out just what's going on there. He has some time left, but we can't let it go. I saw you deleted Clay Helton. You want to talk about Jeremy Pruitt. Let's talk about both, because I like the Clay Helton talk of a hot seat, because yes, he won the Pac-12 by the Pac-12 being like, you win, congratulations. Like, it was a game show. I still love that. That's amazing. But this is my thing about Helton. His seat's probably a little cooler than it once was, but everybody in the Pac-12 really hopes his seat is cooler, which is, I think, the more interesting factor of this. He's not winning in California like he's supposed to, as in recruiting-wise. So every year that Clay Helton doesn't lose his job or isn't on a hot seat to win kids from California, everyone else in the Pac-12 is having a feast day. So it's super interesting.
Now, there's one thing about that. There's one thing about that. The reason that Clay Helton has not recruited well the last 3 years is because he is basically, from a national media standpoint, he has been on the brink of being fired the last 3 years, you know, basically the entire time he's been there. And that's something that obviously hurts his recruiting. It's hard to sell people on coming and playing for you when, you know, those same players can look on any relevant media stream and say, wait, is this guy, you know, is he going to be here the next 4 years? Is he a guy that's locked in? But I think that with his seat becoming cooler this year, I think that could pay him dividends in recruiting in the future. So that's the only thing I would say about Helton, is I would not put, you know, California's recruiting, because again, we've talked about it with Oregon, most specifically in Mario Cristobal, about how they have dominated California, all right, because they have. They have just eaten USC, UCLA, they've eaten those teams for lunch, and as far as recruiting goes. And they have benefited from UCLA not being very good. And Clay Helton, you know, hey, maybe he gets fired tomorrow. Maybe he keeps his job next year. So I think that the security with that, and that's kind of why I put it, you know, I put him on there as a joke, because every year we talk about him being on the hot seat, Clay Helton. And Clay Helton really has done a nice job to cool his seat. He's taken, you know, of course, he had kind of a quarterback decision that he ended up making last year, had a couple of quarterbacks that he could have played, ends up sticking with Slovis, and Slovis has done a very nice job. USC has done a nice job, both on you know, really on both sides of the ball, and he's got him playing in a Pac-12 championship. Again, kind of by default, but he's there.
Yeah, no, he did help, and it's going to be interesting to see kind of like the attention off of it. But USC is, I think, always a perpetual hot seat too, right? It's like Texas. It's like some of these bigger programs that if you're not winning all the time, if you're not going back, you know, USC hasn't had a Reggie Bush in a while for a reason. And, you know, when you don't have guys like that coming through that program, It's gonna his seat's always gonna be warm, but it's gonna be interesting to see. But it's also like he's winning now, right? But what happens next year when we have a normal schedule and it's not just Pac-12 opponents and you don't have 2 weeks maybe to prepare for some of your more important games? One thing I think is going to be super interesting is this USC team won their games, and I always applaud winning, right? It doesn't matter how you do it, but they've been close games. Not all, you know, Arizona State gave them a run, and Arizona State's going to be there a while. UCLA and Chip Kelly are kind of figuring it out a little bit, and they gave them a run. This has not been the most confident winning strategy or just wins overall from USC. That's why I think the Helton job is super interesting, because this seat could be cooled, but it could be very hot. You know, they have the furnace under there and they could throw coal in at any moment. So his job is super interesting. And you want to talk about a job that has got coal thrown under it. And we talked about this when it was about Gus Malzahn and Auburn. And then anybody related to Hugh Freeze, it's Jeremy Pruitt. Pruitt, and we talked about the coach before, and I think it was Butch Jones, right? Jerry Pruitt's had about the same record as Butch Jones. And he is one of the Saban guys who, oh, we're going to bring in Jerry Pruitt because he worked for Saban. He's going to turn the program like Saban did, and then he did it. And now he's starting to lose some recruits. The season went kind of crap. He had a winning streak. Winning streak didn't face a ranked opponent. And Tennessee fans will cling on, and they have one of the most intense fan bases in the country. Okay, like I think it's A&M and then Tennessee, right? Like Tennessee Online is insane, and they have people that really care about that program. So whenever they struggle, you're going to hear about it. And what killed him is his quarterbacks were horrible, and they had a very good offensive line. We raved about their offensive line, and we saw it. Me and you saw it when they played Missouri. And they absolutely dominated them in the trenches. And they got their two running backs a chance to really play successful. But when you can't open the field at all because Garantano or Bailey are struggling that much, you take it away. We saw this at Mizzou, Georgia. Mizzou had a problem passing the ball. Why? Because they couldn't run anywhere. And it really hurts when your quarterback is the reason that's the problem, or quarterbacks. And again, like Pruitt started real hot, and they got really cold really fast. And they said, we'll warm you up here. Let's warm up your seat a little. And again, surprise, just because the sweepstakes almost for Hugh Freeze is existing, his seat became hotter because Gus Malzahn got fired, which I think is just insane.
Yeah, and the thing about Jeremy Pruitt, and I'm going ahead and I'm running the numbers and checking them up just to make sure before I drop this on you. I mean, I think that it's very reasonable, my Texas A&M bias aside, to just go ahead and assume that this weekend Tennessee's probably getting beat by A&M, right?
Yeah.
We hadn't seen anything from Tennessee that would make you think otherwise. A&M's defense has really come to play. With that being on the table, I guess you could say, of that would be the worst finish in Tennessee football history since 1909. 1909, where they were 1-6-2. That's not a good look for Jeremy Pruitt, obviously. I mean, even in their worst years, you know, they were maybe one game under 500, if, you know, maybe two. You know, there was a couple of 4-6 years and stuff like that. But, man, a 3-7, like that is that's a really tough one for Jeremy Pruitt to come back from. And again, we talked about on the show last week, you know, they've lost like 5 recruits in the last 2 weeks or something like that, with some pretty high profile guys, of course, you know, stepping out on him. And one thing that could potentially save Jeremy Pruitt is I think that he's also in a position where he could potentially shuffle some stuff around, because, again, Tennessee's defense I don't think has been terrible. I think they've had a lot of pressure put on them by their awful offense. I think that, you know, the turnovers and the fact that they just haven't been very productive on offense has put their defense in a compromising position. And so it is possible that Jeremy Pruitt could maybe Hail Mary an offensive coordinator and see if that works and see if they can turn it around. But they need help on and it's on offense for the most part. And unfortunately, that's not Pruitt's area of expertise. But I think that he could potentially shuffle around and get an offensive coordinator and save his job. But the offense that they're running right now, with the pieces that they have, I mean, again, they had no excuse not to be good this year. They had everything they could have wanted. They had, you know, pretty solid, you know, not amazing, but decent wide receiving core. Their defense was pretty good last year, especially towards the, you know, down the stretch. They had a really good running game that was anchored not only by two really good running backs, but 5 incredible offensive linemen. You know, nothing but 5 stars and a graduate, fifth-year senior. couldn't have asked for a better situation than what they had this year on offense. And they didn't perform. And why? You hit it on the head. It's because their quarterback play has been nothing short of abysmal, really, their entire career. I mean, again, chalk Jared Garantano up is, you know, a Felipe Franks at Florida, a Jake Bentley at South Carolina. I mean, there's been tons of these guys. You know, we're looking at potentially a Bo Nix at Auburn, a guy that we're waiting for them to take that next step. And in his four-year career, it never happened. You know, Garantano just never took that step, right? So that is essentially, you know, that is essentially where Tennessee stands, unfortunately. And so it's possible that they get rid of Pruitt. I think that it's more likely he shuffles the staff. I think that that could potentially buy him another year. But yeah. And then I guess the last one that we talked about a little bit earlier, but, you know, Scott Satterfield, I think that Satterfield is safe, but he definitely could have rode the momentum from last season. His team definitely underperformed this year. It's only his second season. You could chalk it up to a multitude of things, you know, pandemic, you know, it's only your first real recruiting class and you didn't even really get to use them because you didn't have fall camp. You can make tons of excuses for Satterfield. I think that he's probably fine, but I will agree with you that it's never a good thing to have your bosses and even your coworkers, you know, your fellow coaches and stuff, thinking that you're looking to get out, right? Which you know, he did. And again, it could have just been a passing look at other jobs. But, you know, the media got on it. And so, of course, that is going to not help him necessarily. But again, I think that Satterfield is a really good coach. I think, you know, he was kind of who really put Appalachian State on the map, you know, and is then led to a quick transition, you know, from Drinkwitz, you know, coaching there for 1 year. They had their best season ever, largely due to a lot of what Satterfield had brought there previously. Drinkwitz capitalized on that, parlays that into a job with Missouri, in which he's done very well in season number one. So Satterfield, I think that he's safe, but I think that he could have done things that could have made him even safer, you know, in his job security. But you know, again, he just kind of was checking around, seeing what all was available. But then I guess the last thing that we were kind of going to talk about is some potential guys that I think could be available. You know, not that they're in danger of getting fired, but, you know, guys that are in a current position and may look to see what's out there as far as head coaching. And I wrote down a couple of them, and I'd like to hear some of yours too, Jerry. But I mean, of course, you know, some of the most obvious ones, I think you could say Steve Sarkisian, of course. He's kind of at step two of the very typical, you know, Alabama pipeline, you know, of the cycle, basically, where, you know, you have success as a head coach at a big program, and then something happens, right? In Sarkisian's case, he was an alcoholic and ended up getting fired. He then goes and is an analyst at Alabama. He's then a coordinator at Alabama. And now we're waiting for him to take the next step into a head coach. What kind of job he's going to get, I'm not sure. I mean, he could take a Lane Kiffin and go to an FAU-like program. And something that I think to watch out for, just to kind of talk, you know, we're going to talk about some other coaches that could be leaving. You know, some of these court coaches that aren't being forced out, per se, I'd look at like a place like that is where Sarkisian, I think, could potentially land. And then, of course, the other most obvious one is you could look at a guy like Tony Elliott, co-offensive coordinator for Clemson as well. I think he's somebody, again, he's a pretty well-paid assistant, but he's a guy that I think, you know, I think that if I were a head coach, especially in kind of that area, you know, going up in the ACC, you know, if I'm like a smaller school, I'm definitely giving him a call, no doubt about it, because, again, his offense has been very good at Clemson, and it's been pretty sustained. So I think that that's something that he could potentially improve as well. We talked about Art Briles' merits of coaching, that sort of thing. And then just couple of names, you know, or at least one that I think is very under the radar, but something that at least in like Aggie chat boards and stuff like that, Mike Elko, I think, you know, he's had success as a defensive coordinator pretty much everywhere he's been. It wouldn't surprise me if he gets a look at a smaller school as well.
I think my biggest are still is going to be Sark and Hugh Freeze, the two that I'm kind of keyed on as guys that are either going to be moving on. Sarkisian, I think, is the most interesting out of them, right? You've had these problems as a former head coach. And I'm not sure if Sarkisian is really that ready to move. Okay. The reason being is right now, that dude has the weapons on weapons on weapons, which I think is one of the reasons that he's looked so good, right? I'm not going to take away from his game planning necessarily, but the dude's throwing it. They got rid of literally their best receiver, Jalen Waddle, gets hurt. then Devontae Smith got wins to the Heisman race. Like, you don't get that at any – there's no other program in the country that happens. If Travis Etienne got hurt, you wouldn't see, like, the backup running back show up in the Heisman running. Like, that, there's very few programs where anything near that can happen, and Alabama's one of them. Hugh Freeze, obviously, I'm just interested to see what happens, who's going to take the brunt of some of the negative PR, but also the ability, you know, who's going to take that risk? Because, hey, as good as a coach as he is, he comes with baggage. And, you know, that's going to be one that will get some flack here and there. It's becoming more and more acceptable, I think. I think people are kind of just getting over it and realizing that he's just too good of a coach to look aside. But there is going to be flack when that comes with that. And I'm just interested in those two guys. More than anything, I don't look as much at guys who are in jobs that can move or coordinators just as much yet. I haven't looked in that much, especially because I think a lot of the positions this year are in a really weird spot. For example, like Arizona, there's just a weird job. Good, not a bad job, but a weird one. Illinois, a weird job. The only one that's really appeasing and not and kind of traditional but challenging is Auburn, right? Like, a lot of these jobs that haven't been filled already. I'm going to just circle back. The one thing I am super interested in, I think this will be my final point of the day, is Kane Womack at South Alabama. That is an interesting ass hire. Like, yep, put the explicit on it. That's an interesting hire. Like, he is younger, and he's very quiet. I think this is a Dave Arnett. This is, if he wants to be like Dave Arnett right now, this is where he kind of looks like. He's a very numbers heavy guy, defensive minded, going to a small spot. I'm going to keep my eye on South Alabama just because that is super, super intriguing. And more than positions that are open and guys that can move, the fact that he is a head coach already shocks me. Yeah, and not in a bad way. I just want to see how it works out.
Yeah, and then finally, just to go over some other names, and of course we mentioned them at the beginning, but since it's been, you know, close to an hour and a half since all that happened, just to go over some other names, you know, of course we looked at guys, of course, Luke Fickell, in any big job, you think that he's at least getting a call. Not that he's taking it, but he's available, perceived to be available at least at Cincinnati. You've got Lance Leipold at Buffalo, Sean Lewis potentially at Kent State, and you've got some, you know, we talked about some high-profile coordinators as well, the defensive coordinator for Cincinnati, because a couple of teams this year have already hired defensive coordinators, defensive guys, you know, of course, most notably being Clark Lee at Vanderbilt. But with that, I think that we've pretty much wrapped up the coaching segment. Stay tuned, because don't stay tuned. It'll probably be a separate podcast, but we'll be talking later today. This is on a nice Tuesday. We're going to be talking after the rankings come out about our previews for next week. Just a little bonus episode for you here. And also be looking out for, we are also going to be talking about basketball in a separate podcast, because, you know, Jerry and I, we like football, but we love some college basketball. And so we're going to be starting that up as well pretty soon. So be looking out for that as well.
Yeah, no, thank you guys for tuning in, listening to Walking the Field. Next episode might be Walking the Court. You don't know. Like Alex said, we are going to talk about some college basketball, probably right after I edit this episode already and knock that out. We want to say thank you, of course. Keep listening on. We appreciate all the love and support. Rate us 5 stars on whatever platform allows that, because I'm not that good at podcast platforms. And subscribe. Yeah, do us all those little favors. We'll talk to you a little bit. We have tons of content coming out on this Tuesday or whenever you listen to these podcasts here at Walking the Field. Peace.